All right, we are ready for Joey Tamale's monumental introduction to this episode 31.
All right. So for those of you who didn't listen to the last episode, our new guessing game is tour stops past and present.
Go.
Last week was probably a record-breaking, or last episode was a absolutely record-breaking, will never be touched again, speed by Simon. And he claims that it was a little unfair because
Too much cable talk before we recorded.
All right, well, there will be none for this one. All right. I am dreaming of a tour stop. And this tour stop is famous for its history. Not just its history in disc golf. Actually, I would say this tour stop is more famous for its non-disc golf history than for its disc golf history by about 1,000 years.
Is it tall in Estonia?
It is.
Yeah. This game might be too easy. We might need to switch it up.
That's fine.
There is there's some debatable answers so far. The speed of them.
I was just thinking like the oldest place I can think of, and I was like, Old Town Tallinn. Wow.
Well,
Good game, good game. Welcome back. Welcome back, you little world travelers.
Joey's the world traveler. Where are you, Joey? This is we have the most diverse set of time zones we've ever had on this podcast before.
5:28 p.m. over here in the Pearl of Africa, as it's known, Uganda. And then we've got, let me see, it's gonna be like 9:30 where Simon is, and 7:30 where Eagle is.
Yeah, it's just past 7 p.m. or 7:30,
Yeah, AM.
7 a.m. that is.
Yeah, I'm 10 hours ahead of you. 10 hours ahead of Mr. McMahon. Crazy place to be recording. I honestly didn't think we would pull this off. And the fact that the connection looks this good on my cell signal is fascinating to me. But when was our last episode that we even recorded? Did we record one after Gyropalooza?
We did.
I think it was just a few days after Gyropalooza. I got sick after that trip,
Oh,
so
that's right.
we had to wait like 5 or 6 days before I felt good enough to talk again.
That's right. And then since then, I actually went out and visited Simon, and we went on a trip.
We need a quick Joey Tamale appreciation moment for bringing his podcast gear to freaking Africa. That is commitment to a whole nother level.
I mean, when I looked at how much space it would take up in my bag, it was honestly not that much extra considering the gear I was already bringing. It was literally this mic and that little Zoom recorder and this cable, and that's all I needed. So,
that all fits in a
yeah.
sock.
And it does. It does. Just to keep any scratches from developing. But we had what I would say was basically almost no time at home for me. I think I was home for 3 days, 4 days, unpacked all my stuff from the tour. I took my car in to the mechanic at the end of the year to get it all checked out, and had to get a new catalytic converter. So that's a cool $3,000 bill right there. But the mechanic loves the shape that my car is in, and I really trust my people. I've been with them for a long time, and they are very firm in the belief that if I continue to take care of it like I have, that it's going to last a long time. So I feel comfortable making a purchase like that on a car that's as old as that one. But I got a good mechanic. And I think here's a little piece of unsolicited advice. All right. This is my unsolicited advice for being an adult. And it's a metaphor that I use from a show that I watched when I was a kid called The West Wing. I guess I was a bit older. I was maybe like 12 or 13. Very famous White House show. And basically, the president, the actor who's playing the president, says that a good president knows his lane, but a great president knows what lanes aren't his and knows how to surround himself with people who know those lanes and to trust them. And I think that becoming a good president in your own life is super important. Like, spend energy and time and money on the stuff that you, especially time, like spend your time on the stuff that you are good at that is directly benefiting you. But we're in a day and age now where being an adult requires pretty complex understanding, or at least like a really successful adult requires like complex understanding of like a lot of pretty specific, complicated areas like finances or mechanics with auto. Or if you're trying to do everything by yourself, you're going to get burned out. And I think that it's cool to learn new things, but I think that really successful and not overworked people know how to lean on the people that they trust and use the money that they earn in their time as a way to.
Speaking of lean on, you need to put a pillow under your neck or else you're going to have a terrible kink in your neck.
All right.
You're welcome.
So we had.
I wish you had the site we had right now. We can watch Tamale with no clothes currently.
Wow, I have clothes on. It's just warm here. But yeah, just a really great trip out to Boston and Nova Scotia.
My dad brought up a story the other day, and we might have to cut this out, but I think it fits under podcast parameters. We were in Tyler, Texas, 2021, playing the Texas State Championships. Does Joey know what I'm going to say?
At first, I thought it was a different story that you were going to tell from Worlds that year in Ogden.
Well,
you remember that one? That one is so bad. That's what I was thinking of.
Maybe a different story. But we were staying there with, shout out, MVP team member Aiden Guthrie, Calvin Heimberg.
Heather Young?
No, yet Heather Young. And the key part of the story was her mom, Amy Young. And it was a wild sleeping arrangement because everyone was just sprawled out across the entire house.
Me and Pat slept side by side on living room beds.
Yes. And I just remember that you walk out in the morning, or my dad remembered that you just walk out in the morning with just you and your underwear in front of Heather Young and her mom. And Heather, I don't think is really used to seeing people like in their underwear, especially with the style of upbringing she had. And I remember my dad, he asked Amy, Heather's mom, what do you think about this? Does this bother you? And Amy said, it normally would, but it's just Joey.
I've never heard that story.
Well, that's the story that my dad has.
It's just Joey. Does that mean I'm like not dangerous?
Yeah, so you're not dangerous. You're just like, you're able to pull it off, Joey. Congratulations.
I must get it from my dad. I mean, I think my dad, like in the summers, like when I was a kid, must have just like, I do remember him like doing backyard projects with like just his like working shorts on, and if it got hot, like he was no stranger to just like ripping his shirt off, and that's has to be where it comes from, because I don't know why I do it. And I feel, I guess too, like I think something about playing like high school athletics, like having a boys' locker room coming through school is also like another way that I think a lot of guys just learn to be more comfortable, like with not all your clothes on. Just like it's like way more normal. I don't know. Like I think European listeners can resonate to this more. I mean, if you go to like a European spa, just like the kind of the body confidence or the lack of like shock around like kind of public nudity is way less intense in Europe, I feel like, than in the US. So what a story. Gosh, that brings me way back. That was a crazy tournament. I don't even, that was one of the most mentally challenging courses layouts I've ever played in my life. That first year. Did you play that tournament, Simon, when they had it on Dogwood the first year when it was like the entire layout was in the woods?
I don't believe so. I think I played that track at some point, but never in the tournament.
I think it was a national tour, so it'd be 2021, I think is what when it was. And then we went back there like 2 years later, I think, and they had like a different layout that Barsby had like tweaked because he's local.
Right. I wasn't at that year. I think there's like this, there's like a tornado watch there.
Yeah. But I enjoyed the new layout better than the previous one, but wow, crazy throwback. But yeah, Simon.
Speaking of clothes, one before you get to your last trip, I just realized like this year that like the PDGA downgraded the dress code. Like the dress code is basically you just have to wear a shirt, some pants, and some shoes. Like it used to be like performance material, like collared shirt. And that's not a thing anymore. So, like, I was thinking, what's stopping me from coming to a pro tour event and just playing in a tank top?
What about nipple tape?
The sleeve rule is gone for men?
I'm looking at the dress code right now, and there is nothing that says anything about sleeves or, like, the cotton shirt.
I think you should do nipple tape.
Does that count as a garment?
If you, you know, make it look nice enough.
Does the Pro Tour have a dress code?
Don't they just defer to the PDGA? There's a lot of instances where the Pro Tour just abides by whatever existing policy the PDGA has.
I need to dig deeper because...
So what do you remember, Eagle, about the previous versions of the dress code being so annoying?
I didn't think it was annoying. I thought it was like necessary, but it was A tier and above. Players were required to wear like a performance material and or collared shirt. And now I don't believe any of that exists.
Wow. What changed that, do you think?
It's very interesting because I might be playing in a tank top next year. Showing them guns off.
Hey.
Can't wait to see your tank top nice and MVP branded out.
Yeah.
Hey, have you... No, you go.
I'm going to have to get tattoo sleeves of my sponsors.
That would be super committed.
That would be too committed.
I got to shout him out just because... I got to shout him out just because... you mentioned that, but there's a friend of mine down in Florida, in Tampa, Mitchell, and Mitchell is a local pro content creator, disc golfer, and he got MVP's patent number tattooed on his arm. Just the patent number. He's not even on Team MVP, and he got it tattooed on his arm.
What a mad lad.
What a mad lad.
Mitchell.
Shout out Mitchell. He's also pretty decent buddies with Vinny. So from that same little Cliff Stevens crew. Simon, you want to tell the people about our adventure? Or at least start us off and see if Eagle has questions about it?
Absolutely. So it all started with Ben Smith, who is widely known throughout Canada as a course designer. I think he has 30-plus courses in the ground. He's run a handful of Canadian national championships. We kind of know Ben best from our Prince Edward Island adventures back in the day as the TD and kind of the guy that was taking care of all the pros, giving us places to sleep and making sure everyone feels welcomed and basically has everything they need. So he's been reaching out to me for years, trying to collab on course designs or kind of just picking my brain on different styles of course design to make sure he's doing it right. He has a very unique approach to course design using a lot of math, and he breaks it down in very interesting and unique ways that I've never really thought about. I kind of just go to a place, look at it, and see what would be the most fun. But Ben's been doing this for a much longer time than I have, and he has kind of broke it all down to a science of what a professional course on paper could or should look like. So he came to me, must be about a year ago now, maybe more, maybe a bit less, about this location in Nova Scotia, also known as Canada's ocean playground, where I've never been. So that was cool. And I didn't even know that Boston had straight flights to Halifax, which is somehow only 1 hour away, which kind of made this whole thing more interesting to me that it was so easy to get there. And having Dustin with me all year, I thought, hey, what a cool opportunity to kind of bring a camera along to do a little finding the lines episodes, potentially even bordering beyond disc golf territory, with a little mini documentary about what the heck is going on disc golf scene Nova Scotia. Just completely something I've never really known about, or I don't think most your average disc golfer knows about disc golf in Nova Scotia. So I thought it could be a fun concept. Also, I thought it was a cool opportunity for Dustin because Dustin is not a YouTuber. Dustin is a filmmaker, a videographer who wants to do more documentary style, more cinematic style. So I thought this project could fit really nicely for him kind of at the end of the year.
Totally up his alley, by the way. Like, that is absolutely spot on. That is exactly what Dustin is perfect at.
Yes, and you can tell by just the slow-mo montages on my YouTube channel all year that he has a really good eye for what looks good. Anyway, Dustin brought up bringing Joey along about a month or two before the trip. He said it would be nice to have a second camera angle and having like someone with him that kind of he can trust and knows what he's doing, to kind of elevate the project in a way, because two camera angles go much further than one. But we all knew that Joey was going to Africa on Monday, and this trip was going to go through Sunday. So Joey's plan basically had to be to fly home from Halifax, no direct flights to Minneapolis, so we had to like go over Toronto, back to Minneapolis, have one night to like reorganize, repack, and the next day fly to Africa. So I was like, there's no world where this is doable and makes sense. But Joey, after many phone calls, convinced me that hey, I am young and I love to travel. This is my thing. I can do this. I want to do this. This is my life. This is what I like doing. I was like, okay, I can't relate, but you're in. So we somehow made it work. Joey actually ended up flying to my house 2 days prior to the Canada trip. Our goal was to get some stuff done in my woods and help me a bit with just course stuff. But we ended up not really getting anything done because we have so many other things going on at all times that you can't ever really plan on what you're going to do.
Dude, Simon is unbelievably busy guy. There were certainly like a couple of moments that we had that we could have done some stuff. But I mean, first of all, you know, the kids are, that's a whole job. And especially for Simon, I mean, now he's entering the co-parenting stretch of the year, but when he's coming home off the tour, it's like, all right, you're stepping in off the bench. Like, you know, mom needs a break, right? Can you like take over? So between the children and, I mean, dude, people want Simon Lazat to design their courses. Let me just say that. I won't tell you where he's designing them. I won't tell you who he's designing them for, but let's just say that mile marker made quite the positive impression, if there wasn't already a good existing reputation beforehand. So we got to go out a day, and I got to visit a design that Simon is working on with Casey White, which is out on their YouTube channel, so I guess I don't have to be that discreet.
Everything's fine. It's a local farm here pretty close to where I live, and that's just a fun other challenge that we're doing right now. We're actually going back on Friday this week to hopefully freaking finalize it.
Have you figured it out on your iPad?
I think so, but I'm just waiting to be wrong again because it happens all the time.
What did you tweak?
Joey, we can't get into that right now because people have no idea what we're talking about.
That's fair. There was one little section that it was like four holes were all right next to each other. And that was the part that was keeping Simon up at night, trying to have a way that all those holes could be fun and good without hitting someone from a different tee pad.
Yeah, actually, on the flight over to Halifax, I was staring. It was like an hour and 5 minutes or something. And the entire flight, I was just staring at my iPad, looking at the freaking Google Maps, and like literally just breaking my brain over how can I make this work and just losing my mind. And I was actually like pissed off when we landed that I didn't figure it out. And just an hour of staring at nothing, just getting nothing done, and just, oh, I was in a bad mood. Anyway, we got there. I really had no idea what to expect exactly. I when I go on trips like this, I like to keep it super open-ended and like not prepared because I just want first reactions to be like as real as possible. And if I don't know what's coming, I'm always just, I don't know, I feel like it's better content and more real. But it was really cool. What a scene. Shout out Ben for being so into disc golf. And I mean, his friend group there, Ben is local to Nova Scotia, so he lives actually 20, 30 minutes from the ski hill we were on.
Pugwash Bay. That's where he's from. Pugwash Bay, Nova Scotia.
Good old Pugwash. Yeah, we went to dinner there one night. Pretty nice restaurant, actually, in like a little shack you wouldn't really assume. But yeah, we had a really good time. I thought this trip was extremely fun. Super challenging course on the side of a ski hill. The first five holes, I remember when we first walked that hill, the conditions were terrible. It was like maybe high 30s in temperature, and it was like raining and snowing at the same time, and it was super windy, and we were all just looking at each other like, oh, I remember before. It's just like you're standing in front of a wall.
And I went from very, very cold to very, very hot in about 10 minutes. I think those first four holes, maybe even five technically, put the starting five at Beaver Ranch to shame. It's not even close, the hike that you have to embark on to get to the top of this course. It is ridiculous.
Just the hike to get to hole one or something.
Yeah, it is.
You didn't experience it day one.
Day two, though. We did the warm-up holes. No, for anybody who...
Sorry, go ahead, Joey.
I was just going to say, for anybody who wants to know a bit more about Ben, obviously these videos will be out on Simon's YouTube channel in the next month or so, I would say. But Brian Geis, one of our friends, former Jomez Pro.
Shout out, Brian.
Legend. He made a really amazing piece on Ben from a few years ago called Throw Canada. It's on Jomez. I highly recommend you go check it out. Really, really amazing group of guys. Ben is just, he's so methodical with how he goes about designing courses. I suppose when you hear some of his stories about how he's lost courses to hurricanes, you kind of understand why he is so picky when he's like starting a course. Because he's seen entire designs wiped out in one storm. But just the way he looks at the trees and analyzes, and I don't know, I was enjoying all of it. I mean, the filming was really simple for me. Like, I'm just following Dustin's lead, and it's a type of content we've shot a lot before. It was really fun for me from a technical stance. I don't shoot a lot on Canon, and Dustin has really, really, really nice Canon equipment. So that was really fun, actually, to... I mean, it's just like, once you're in a system, you're not really going to go to another system. I have like more than $10,000 invested into Sony gear, so I'm never going to be using a Canon equipment. So working with Dustin and getting to use that was actually really fun. Those were two cameras that teenage Joey like watched a lot of YouTube review videos on and wanted to buy. And Dustin's, I mean, he's amazing at it. And Simon is great at it. I mean, we all... Like Dustin was saying, we're all very experienced doing this. So that part was really easy. I don't think there was a lot of nerves from us on the content side of it, of like missing stuff. It was mostly just like dealing with the weather. But yeah, what an incredible place. Eagle, also total side note, I learned about, have either of you guys heard about, I guess now you have, Simon. Eagle, have you heard about the Halifax explosion?
This is the first time I've ever hearing about it in my life.
Well, it happened like 108 years ago in the Halifax Harbor. It was like a, I want to say it was a Norwegian ship and like a Dutch ship or a French ship or maybe some other ship. And they collided and one of the two ships was full of munitions. And it is the largest man-made explosion, non-nuclear man-made explosion in history. It killed like 3,000 people. It caused a tsunami that wiped out like three neighborhoods, and it broke glass up to 100 miles away from the explosion. Just a crazy, crazy fact. It's a huge bang.
Yeah, so
Simon,
overall,
back to your
cool. Yeah, it was really cool meeting local disc golf community again. It was really cool talking to the management team of the Ski Mountain and their vision behind adding disc golf. And, you know, Ben's big dream and vision is to host the Disc Golf World Championships in Nova Scotia on a ski mountain. So that is obviously the main reason we went there. Ben wanted my take on his course design and basically making sure that it is good enough, fair enough, and the right amount of challenging and fun. So he already had a blue layout that was basically playable, and he wanted to extend it with me to a gold championship level layout. So that was the main job we were there for, and we got it all on camera. And the off-the-course shenanigans were especially fun last week, I thought.
It was great.
Basically, Ben's helper for the week was Scott. Shout out to Scott, who was...
Scott was the best.
Unbelievable entertainment. He gave us a tour of the fire station he volunteers at, and he brought us to the waterfall. All this is happening in like the worst conditions you can possibly imagine. It was just... We did not have luck with the weather, but we were out there battling. And the cribbage battles at night were definitely a highlight. Shout out to everyone who knows the card game cribbage.
I had like a record for myself. I don't think I've ever gone undefeated in cribbage over an entire span of time like that. I didn't lose a single. So we never played, to be clear for everyone listening, we always had four of us, or sometimes five once Dustin kind of understood the rules and started playing. But we were mostly playing partners cribbage. So you play with the person across from you. But I went undefeated for three. I guess it's still going. I haven't lost since, but I've never won that many games of cards that many times in a row with that many different partners.
Joey, you absolutely killed it.
I think I just got super lucky. I mean, like, not that I don't know what I'm doing in cribbage, but I feel like every time we won, it was that point where, like, every time we flipped our hands over, the, like, opposing team was just looking at our hands and being like, how is this even possible that you guys just keep getting this many points? And that's what it's like to ride the luck train. I mean, you gotta at least embrace it while it's there. It's not always there.
It was a very, very, very fun trip, and I'm looking forward to being back since it is actually just around the corner from Boston. I want to see it in the summer, and I want to see it in nicer weather because it was pretty brutal. But wow.
I got to give a shout out to just like all of the maritime provinces in Canada, which is, I think it's New Brunswick.
New Brunswick,
Nova Scotia, and Prince Edward Island.
Newfoundland?
No, it's not a maritime. It's part of Atlantic Canada, but it's not one of the maritime provinces. The maritime provinces are just three, which is weird. I didn't understand that. I was like, doesn't maritime mean sea? And Newfoundland is an island. Like, it's in the sea. Of course it should be. Well, whatever. Yeah, it's just, I think there is, from what I've been understanding, Ben was saying, you think Nova Scotia is pretty, wait till you go to Newfoundland. Why would you ever need to go to Norway? You could just go to Newfoundland. It's the same.
I was looking at some pictures of it, and it looks spectacular.
I think we got to go to Newfoundland and Labrador. I think Labrador looks spectacular, too, just way more remote.
My aunt and her family are wanting to take a van trip all the way up to Newfoundland from where they live in New Jersey.
And oh, that would be amazing.
My aunt actually wants to move to Nova Scotia, of all places.
I think
They love being by the ocean.
And it's getting milder. That's the thing. Like, it is getting milder and milder. So something that's really interesting about this trip that we went on is we went to a ski resort called Ski Wentworth, and Ben has two courses installed there, blue and a red. And has essentially gained through his friend Scott, who works ski patrol at Ski Wentworth, has gained a good trust and relationship with the owners, who are the brother and sister, the children of the like founder of the resort. And they are sitting on a little bit of extra money from some sales that they've made. And so they are very sort of open to and pushing investments into their ski resort. But what's really interesting to me is that their ski season is getting shorter every year. Like every year they are losing days off their ski season, which is like their main source of income. And so I was asking Scott, like, why are they investing money into this ski resort? Well, and he was like, well, it's not just on the ski slopes, like, or it's not just for the winter. And so they had a local to the area who just so happened to be a world-renowned mountain bike designer.
Oh, yeah.
And he designed their entire mountain bike facilities there. And now they're like one of the best mountain bike facilities in all of Canada, if not the North America. And so they're starting to see that the land they have has multiple uses. And if they connect with the right people and support the projects in the correct ways, they can take a place that usually just relies on 130 days in the winter for skiing into something that can be like a destination place for other sports all year round.
I'm looking at this ski hill. It's like almost a mountain, right?
It's almost a mountain, I would say.
It's almost a mountain.
Almost a mountain. Looks pretty sweet.
Yeah, basically,
there's great shots.
Ice holes up, and then you play
9
holes.
10?
Yeah, 9 or 10 holes on top, which are all relatively flat, with a cool lake, too. And
is
then
it
you
like
play
the,
3 holes down, 4 holes
is
down.
Is it like the course in Jyväskylä, Finland?
I would say comparable, yeah.
Okay, that's what it kind of looks like.
Yeah, I told Ben that I've seen similar tracks in Scandinavia like this, mainly in Scandinavia. But yeah, we had a couple fun little accidents on the way home due to the government shutdown in the U.S. Obviously, the what do you call it? The
FAA?
Hard time getting into the country?
So my flight, my second half of my flight got canceled. So I, right before I'm getting on my Halifax to Toronto flight, I get an email saying that my Toronto to Minneapolis connection has been canceled and I should wait for like a rebooking email. And we were playing this little like pitch and putt in Halifax. And then I, like 20 minutes later, got an email and it was like, your flight has been rebooked. Congratulations. Your new departure time is Tuesday morning. So my layover went from 2.5 hours to 47.5 hours. And if you remember, I was leaving at 6 p.m. on Monday from Minneapolis to Africa. So instantly I'm like, oh no, like how am I going to get home? And I do what any desperate young boy does when he doesn't know what to do. I called my mom and she helped me. She found a flight, which I suppose I could have also done, but she's just mom on the spot. And yeah, she found a flight and was like, should I get this? And I was like about to get on the flight to Halifax, or from Halifax to Toronto. And I was just like, yeah, I'm just get it for safety. And then when I got to Toronto, I searched that flight and it was gone. And so I got one of like the last 2 tickets. And so I booked a hotel, airport hotel in Toronto, woke up at 4:30 in the morning, took the 6:30 plane home, got picked up at just before 9 a.m., went home for 5 hours, got dropped back off, flew to Amsterdam, and then waited most of the day, and then flew last night here, got in at 8:30 in the morning here, and we've just been relaxing in the hotel the rest of the day. But absolutely wild 50 hours to get back. And Dustin's flight also got canceled. He stayed an extra day in Halifax, an extra night. I was the one who had like real things at stake if I was missing connections. I mean, it was just more of like a inconvenience for Dustin. But Simon was unaffected, so I think it's that. I think that
I was emotionally affected.
That's fair. But there's another interesting thing here that I'm going to say. This is my theory for why Simon's didn't get canceled. All right. So when the Halifax explosion happened, the first city that responded to the Halifax explosion was Boston. They sent trainloads and trainloads of doctors and resources and everything that they could. And to this day, every year, the city of Halifax sends a Christmas tree to the city of Boston as a gift. And I think that that's why they didn't cancel Simon's flight to Boston, because they would never mess with that relationship with that great American city. Totally not the truth.
To Boston.
Shout out Boston.
Simon, I think you need to wind this episode.
One thing I noticed in Canada, last thing about this, you never know how often the word about is being used when talking until you go to Canada. Because every time they say about, it stands out so much. And, oh man, the people we hung out with were like, in the nicest way possible, like as Canadian you can get. It was so cool.
Yeah. I like how he says par. par three and a par four.
Oh, an absolute legendary trip.
And for me, it like so much of the Minnesota culture is very parallel to Canadian culture. So it really resonates with me. Like I soak it in. It's so, I mean, it's Aiden Guthrie would, if Aiden Guthrie disappeared into Canada, no one would ever know if that he was an imposter.
Blend right in.
Yeah.
Eagle, what have you been doing for a week and a half?
Well, let's think. I am basically on my off-season routine once again. I'm only at home for around a month. We could talk about what other off-season plans we have in a little bit, but I'm going to be in Hawaii for 2 months starting December 8th. So that's going to be quite a trip. Basically just deciding to do an off-season in Hawaii and more or less live in Hawaii. Going to the Big Island. I'm staying on both west and east side, and I'll be playing a tournament out there. So I'm really, 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 really looking forward to that, because, I mean, Hawaii's probably my favorite place in the world of anywhere I've ever been. It's just absolutely spectacular. But just for right now, just trying to train, going to see my PT, and playing like a pretty decent amount of disc golf locally, trying to get back into like my local leagues, tags matches, because, you know, one thing I noticed when I switched to MVP, I had my shoulder surgery, and I never have really gotten a chance just to play like fun, kind of like semi-competitive rounds. I was thrown right into the tour, and I think there's a lot of value in like playing small little fun events. It's enough to be competitive, and you know, it's enough to get really frustrated when certain people beat you, so it like stokes a little bit of inner fire, and you know, I'm having a good time doing it right now, and the weather's still good here in Colorado. So
what are your courses? Are you going to Valmont?
I'm playing Valmont and Interlochen. Those are the two courses that I need to be playing right now. And honestly, of any courses in the world, I think they might be the most beneficial for my game. Like, no joke.
No, totally.
I'm throwing like these 230 to 280 foot, just like soft little anti-flex upshots.
Man, Interlochen is like kind of slept on. Interlochen is like low-key one of my favorite courses in the Front Range.
Yeah, you have to land things soft. And that's pretty much the only place around you can do that.
It's very like thoughtful design. There's tons of different shapes of shots. And you're right. It's like one of the few places on the Front Range that you're like really concerned about throwing those touch backhand, forehand, landing soft.
Simon's been out to Interlochen.
Oh?
Does that totally remember what you played way back then?
It's right by the highway.
Do you remember when you came to play the 303 Open?
Yeah.
We warmed up at Interlochen. It was okay. Like on the side of the highway.
Is it like kind of like beautiful and hilly?
Yep, it has some hills.
Beautiful?
It's like through a mixed use park.
I don't know if it's beautiful. It's not bad.
My memory sucks. Maybe I need to go look at photos on UDisc. I would remember.
So
I mean, it's a 9-hole course with like 2 alternate layouts.
It's in like an industrial park a little bit, right next to the highway. And
the main like demographic of people coming to play it is people on their lunch break from their like corporate jobs.
Yep. Yep.
What year was this? Ballpark.
2019.
Was Natalia with me?
Natalia was with you.
2019?
Yeah.
Dude, that 303 Open, that was at the Badlands. And I was in my little stint. I feel like I've talked about this just recently, where I stayed with Callie McMorrin and Haley King in Callie's RV, and they were like brand new touring partners. And
you were there?
I was there for not the tournament, but the practice week. I was there. And Haley King got like an ace on one of the holes, and the pro tour like reposted it, and that was like in our practice round. And we stayed with Callie's friend, Sandra Richardson, who does a lot. Like, yeah, she plays Sandra. A lot. Yeah, she's mm-hmm. great. Her and her lovely partner, and they just got a new puppy. And then on Wednesday or Thursday, I got picked up by Seth Finley of the Pro Tour. And that was the trip where the wheel fell off the trailer. We drove to San Francisco. That was that trip where the wheel came off. We going 90 miles an hour down the mountain pass in California.
Yup. I think that's like 2019 is when we've kind of became friends.
It was right after that.
It was right after that.
I think I wasn't really, because our interaction before that was me caddying for the guy who beat you at Glass Blown Open, and he like somewhat egging you to go for a stupid shot that you didn't want to go for.
I wanted to go for that shot.
I know, out of spite.
I did it in practice. For our listeners, it's hole 18 at Country Club or Champions Landing now.
Now it's like
taking a
eight.
Big hyzer over the water.
Oh, no, I'm talking about eight. I'm talking about eight. When Jeff Korns asked you why you were throwing, Jeff Korns told you that Paul was asking why you were throwing mid-range off the tee, and then you triple bogeyed it in the final round with a 3-stroke lead.
Yep.
So that was like,
I remember.
And I was like, but I was a massive Eagle fanboy, because this is what I do remember, is that I had like interacted with you on a couple of your live streams before the start of that yep. season, telling you I was going to like work for the Pro Tour. And like, you guys have to realize, like, I was a bigger fan of Eagle McMahon than any other pro disc golfer I've ever been a fan of at any point in my relationship with this game. So like,
and you still are.
Oh, of course. I just like could have never imagined like where it went. But I remember that specifically. And then I think where we really first bonded was the Portland Open. That was like what I remember. Do you know I still have that trophy?
A bunch of my old stuff.
I still have that trophy.
I think you've mentioned that multiple times.
I think I might whatnot that trophy in like when I get back.
Oh, my gosh.
I wonder what you
have money. No, just kidding. You can have all the profit.
but yeah, there's I am going to be doing that was one of the things I did before Nova Scotia, was I went through my entire collection of MVP and I took out any discs that met two qualifications. One, I had to have bought them because I, under our MVP contract, we can't be taking discs that we get for our allotment and then auctioning them on whatnot. That goes against our agreement. So that was the first condition. And then the second condition was that it was like a rare disc. So I've gone through my entire MVP collection, and I think I've got about 50 discs that are very highly sought after that I have decided I can live without. And I'm going to do some pretty cool whatnot stream when I get back from Africa. So if you are an MVP and you want to potentially get your paws on some goodies, that will be happening.
I like it.
Yeah, I just think the whatnot has been huge for a lot of touring disc golfers this year. And I think that we could use a little more MVP discs being sold on that platform. I think that we can take advantage of that. So, but I brought down, I think, over 100 MVP discs, most of which were, I actually asked them at Gyropalooza what I should take for donations, and they just pointed me to the practice green. So, you know, the little putting green at HQ with all the little holders, I just like went and emptied three of those into boxes, and those are now here in Uganda to be donated, along with, I think, about 40 or 50 glow discs, because that's one thing that's getting super popular here is glow golf. Uganda is going crazy for glow golf. That was like the biggest request we got from things to bring down this trip was, can you please bring anything that glows in the dark?
Wow.
Yeah.
They're lighting it up in Uganda.
Yeah. Yeah. I will briefly, because I think we'll probably have a chance to record an episode next week while I'm still here in Africa. But just to give a preface of what we're doing here, this is my third visit to Uganda. The first one was at the end of 2022, and it has essentially exploded the disc golf scene here, largely in part to Israel, who is the PDGA East Africa coordinator. They've gone from one course to, I think there's like 10 courses now in Uganda. And Israel has taught disc golf clinics in over 80% of the districts in the country and absolutely blooming at the university level. There's three universities now in Uganda that have their own course on campus and have a team. And so we are hosting the inaugural African Disc Golf Summit. Yeah, it's essentially we have 12 fledgling disc golf communities all around Africa right now in various stages of their development. And our goal this weekend is they're all coming here for 5 days, and we have a big contingency, including Avery Jenkins, Zoe and Dustin Keegan, James Koizumi, obviously me and Maria. And we are going to be teaching and doing workshops on all things disc golf. So course design, I think that's one of the coolest workshops. Avery is going to design a course for the course designers live. So that will be really cool for them. So there's like a property that wants a course here in Kampala. So Avery's going to design it as a workshop. And then we're going to be doing Uplay clinics and teaching how to teach. And so it's more of like educating the leaders of those communities. It's a little less like what we're usually doing, where we're setting up a course and interacting with one community. This is like a workshop weekend for a bunch of people running little communities. So very, very, very crazy to be all the way on the other side of the world for disc golf for the third time in the last 4 years. I feel extremely lucky to have the friends that I have who have connected me in the ways to get me involved with this foundation. And I'll tell anybody who will listen that it's the most rewarding work that I do in my entire life is Paul Macbeth Foundation stuff. So I say yes to every one of these trips because I see the impact that this game has on these children in these communities. And there's just something beautiful about the accessibility and the affordability of our sport. And the fact that you can play with a 20-person party card or completely by yourself. And there's just like something that resonates across all other things that divide us in this world. Like, I mean, we could not be in a more different place from where I live. And the same look in those kids' eyes when they get a driver to flip up is the same. It's the same look. It's that same level of excitement. And the leaders and the teachers and the instructors, they have the same level of understanding of how important sports can be for young people. So we're super excited. Next week, we're going to Rwanda, which is a neighboring country, and we're installing the first course in that country. So 2-week trip. But this summit should be really exciting. There's going to be tons of content on the Paul Macbeth Foundation Instagram, on my Instagram, on Uplay's Instagram, PDJ. So there will be lots of exciting stuff to keep your eyes peeled for. But yeah, I'm super excited to be down here. Simon, would you whine for us? The people have been asking.
Whining?
They asked for a whine. It's been like multiple emails now that have asked for whines.
Simon's not a whiner. He's a shiner.
That's right. I wasn't prepared for a whine. Actually, I might be. I still have my notes. And I know I didn't make it all the way through my list. Let me quickly see if I can spontaneously call this up.
Give the people what they want.
Oh God. I know now I remember why I didn't get through these. Some of them are a bit controversial. Well, since we were on the topic of flying.
Simon whines.
I don't think I ever whined about connecting flights. How can it be that if I want to fly, for example, let's say from Boston to Atlanta, like a super normal trip, big city to big city, I go on the internet, look for a flight. Obviously, I want a direct flight because that's what everyone wants. And let's say it's $400 ballpark. But there's also an option for $200 with a stop in freaking, let it be, Chicago. So instead of flying from Boston straight to Atlanta, I could fly for half the price, first to Chicago, and then from Chicago to Atlanta. And this is just an example I just came off the top of my head. Like, there's much worse examples where you can fly, like, 2 hours in the wrong direction and then fly back. Like, I know Niklas Antila, for example, he had to fly from Charlotte to freaking Dallas to then fly from Dallas back to Finland.
Yeah, but that Dallas-Helsinki flight is, almost every time I visit Maria, I fly through Dallas. Dallas to Helsinki. That Finnish Air, they just go back and forth from Helsinki to Dallas. But I totally get what you're saying. I mean, it'll be like, oh, you can do this direct flight for $800 or for $150. You can go fly all the way to the other side of the country, have an overnight layover, and then fly to one more place and then get there.
Yeah, I'm sometimes like, what am I actually paying you for? Are we literally just paying for convenience, or are we paying for the actual airfare and for the gas it takes and the staff it takes to make all this happen? But I think all we're paying for is just the convenience and, I mean, the demand, obviously. Of course, I can't wrap my head around why it is the way it is. I just find it wine-worthy that it is the way it is.
It's worth whining about.
Yep, it is.
That was a spontaneous whine. But then I can shine at the same time. One of my favorite all-time Louis C.K. bits is that he says, anyone who complains about their flight should be ashamed of themselves, because it's a story nowadays if you had like a 30-minute taxi to the runway and that they just let you sit there for 20 minutes. Like, people will complain about that, and they will say, like, oh, it ruined my trip that we had to sit on the runway for 20 minutes. Without completely just forgetting about the fact that we were literally sitting in a chair flying through the sky, that it's a complete miracle and amazing that that's even a thing. And no one even understands how and how it is a thing.
The amount of times that I'm going to think about this one meme that Simon sent me last week now is crazy. You know which one I'm talking about, right, Simon? The one you sent me where it was just like, what is this even? Like, and why does everybody think it's so normal? Like, what are you ever just like, what the heck is going on? Like, why is this the way it is? And then everybody else just like acts like it's totally normal. We live on a floating ball in space, and we're worried about all the things that we're stressed about, or most of the things that you're stressed about in a developed nation, is something that someone made up, something that someone invented, you're stressed about. And there's a lot of perspective that I gain coming here to Africa, a country that you would say, a continent that you would argue would be less happy than other countries because its poverty level. And I would just argue the complete opposite. These are some of the happiest people consistently I have ever met. And I mean, we talk about this on previous episodes of the pod, that money doesn't buy you happiness. But I mean, the point is completely proven here in Uganda. It is the happiest group of people. They have such amazing perspective on life. I think it helps too in a country that if you don't know about Idi Amin, I recommend you do a little research. Just an absolutely brutal dictator who killed thousands and thousands of innocent civilians and just absolutely terrorized this nation for, I think, 25 years. I don't want to be misquoted there, but and I think that that helps with some perspective. But most of the youth in this country, you know, they're two generations or a generation removed from that. So keeping perspective on everything, I think, is really important, like Simon's saying. I mean, I remember the one, I think it was some talk show with, maybe it was Kimmel, and somebody was like talking about their crazy, some famous actor was talking about their crazy travel experience. And then they were like, and then I had to, they didn't have like a car, so I had to run all the way to my jet. And Jimmy Kimmel looks at him, he goes, you had to run across the tarmac to your private jet.
Simple.
What a whine.
Oh,
should we look at some emails?
Yeah, Ben preached to us last week in Nova Scotia that like the quality of life kind of in the middle of nowhere in Nova Scotia for him has been way beyond any other place he's ever lived. And he's very well traveled. He's seen, he's lived in many different places and seen, been all around the world. Yeah. I mean, I'm in the middle of just having too much.
Well, I, from my perspective is I live in Boulder. And I hate going to Denver. I hate dealing with the traffic. I hate dealing with all the people. I love the feeling of being with a little bit less than the average. And I don't know, being next to mountains or an ocean really help with that as well, because it just makes you feel smaller. But I mean, in all honesty, like if I'm driving through New York, Chicago, Boston, I just kind of think to myself, is like, if I had to be put in a situation like this, I couldn't do it. I would not be happy. Well, I'd have to be in a smaller setting.
And that's why I like always when I'm near those cities, I always try to go see them anyway, because for me, it's almost like a little bit of like a victory where it's like, I don't have to deal with all the BS, but I still get to see the best parts of your cities. And I don't have to live there and put up with all the crap, but I get to see all the cool American cities as long as you kind of like, you know, get in, get out. And they're very fun places to visit. I don't see myself ever living in a place larger than Minneapolis, St. Paul. But
the only exception for me is Tokyo. Tokyo does not, even though it's the biggest city in the world, it just, it makes so much sense. It feels absolutely incredible being there. But maybe I would go against that if I had to live there for a long period of time. But at least to visit, from what I saw, it was just spectacular.
Eagle, interesting side note about Ben Smith. Has your dad ever met Ben?
Yeah, I met Ben. My dad met Ben. Ritana met Ben.
So did they...
The Discmania Open in Prince Edward Island.
Did they ever talk about the fact that they both have the same career? Or, I mean, Ben, before course designing, was... spent 25 years as a landscaper and a stonemason. And we stayed at the last client that he kind of keeps from that old gig. And it was like instantly made me think of your dad, because there was like, he was explaining to me even like some of the techniques that they got for doing the top wall, where they like stack the rocks all vertically instead of using mortar at the top. And they got it from the Brits. And I was just thinking, I was feeling Pat McMahon vibes the whole time.
I don't believe that they ever touched base on that.
But it made sense. That's why he was such a
my dad.
Designer. It's made it like really plays well into his current gig. So let's read some emails, maybe.
We can read some emails.
Just cross the hour
quick
mark.
Little side note. I've had a Discord server for a long time, but I've kind of recently opened it up a little bit. I'll see if Will can put my Discord link in the podcast notes. So for our listeners, if you're interested in joining my Discord server, it's a great place to interact, meet some cool people. I've had a really good time, like just talking about random stuff with all the people on there. It's like really good quality, fun people, like a lot of respect. And I actually asked my Discord server about some things that we could talk about once we get through the emails, if we want to have extra topic.
Always. So. I think that's a great idea. Okay, let's go to... okay, here's one. This is not a question, but a comment from Mike Mast. Hey, Eagle. I was sitting on hole 14 on Saturday at MVP Open when you threw your shot under my seat into the bleachers. No need to respond, just a cool memory.
Yep, that was right after the ace. Yeah, it's interesting, like over to the right of that hole, it's still in bounds, which I was watching Ezra and Aaron's practice round, and Aaron was like adamantly opposed to that being in bounds. And it was kind of interesting because I had to like clear the crowd out of their seats to go putt. And like, I mean, there was people like breathing down my neck as I was putting.
Yeah.
And I thought it would have been a really cool putt to make. And unfortunately, I missed it. But
it's like a 40 footer from there.
It was like a 35, 40 footer. Man. Yeah. Definitely right. Makeable. You want to make it.
Harry Brax, what is a moment in your career where you felt like disc golf clicked for you and you suddenly saw the game in a whole new way? I would say for me, that was in 2016. I had been playing for 8 years with five of my best friends and at like three courses, and we were all three sport athletes in other disciplines, so disc golf was just like a fun thing. And one day, one of my buddies came into the lunch table and sat down and he goes, "Guys, disc golf is real." And we were like, "What?" And he was like, "I found it on the internet. It's real. There's a tour. There's these pros. There's like, they film the tournaments. There's like this whole thing." And I was like, "Really?" And he was like, yeah, it's called Jomez Pro. And that was probably the most fateful subscription I ever clicked on, because I don't think I did a single piece of homework for the last 2 years of high school after I found out that disc golf was real. And that's when it clicked for me. I mean, I went from enjoying it at two courses with my friends to essentially going all in, trying to consume as much content as possible, trying to learn as much about the pro scene as possible. And that's where I obviously, like, within 3 or 4 weeks of that encounter with all my buddies at lunch, I was watching Eagles vlogs. So that's my answer.
It happened quick.
Yeah. I mean, there was the fuel was there because I had been playing for almost a decade. So it was ready. It just needed that dot to be connected.
I don't really have a moment I think it clicked, because I've been doing it my whole life, literally.
What about like the first big boy course you ever saw?
No, one moment that stands out, at least like on a competitive side, is 2007, I want to say. A tournament in Potsdam, Germany, one of the first ever European events. Well, I don't know if it was part of the European tour or if it just was a tournament where people from Sweden and Finland actually showed up to play. That's also the same week I met Yussi for the first time. That's kind of when I first noticed or learned that more pressure made me better. Starting early on, but especially at this event, I learned that I am a tournament player and that the pressure of a tournament is something I need to even try in a way. And the more pressure I felt, like, the better I played. So I always tell people when they play with me for the first time and it's just casual or a practice round and I'm just so bad at disc golf, and they just wonder, wait, like, how are you even a professional? Like, the second it matters, I just do better. And I don't know if that's lucky or
that's genetic.
That has some... I don't know exactly what the reason for it is, but I know a lot of people have the exact opposite experience, that in practice they are geniuses and then the second it matters, they fall apart. And for me, it's luckily, I don't really know how else to put it, it's always been the opposite.
Well, I think in your brain too, it's like, why should I put in maximum effort and focus if it's not worth anything to me? I think that's where your brain goes. Like, what's the point of what's the point of going 120% mentally and physically into this shot if there's nothing to be gained from it? Other than mental satisfaction. Okay, here's another good one. Oh, Eagle, did you want to answer?
Eagle gets to answer.
Yes, my bad.
I'm excited to answer this question. There's a bunch of moments for me, but when I saw disc golf differently was probably maybe a year or two after I started playing. I vividly remember going to Johnny Roberts doubles for the first time. Mm. And this is like before I ever saw people with like these huge bags filled with discs. And I remember pulling up in the parking lot and hearing my dad say like, oh, wow, there's a lot of good players here. And you saw everybody like practice putting, like, you know, talking to each other about discs and like, you know, putting money in and playing for playing competitively. And I just remember that moment. I was like, oh, wow. So this is something real that people like put time and energy into. And from that moment was like, okay, wow. It changed my whole perspective. It's like, okay, I actually want to get good at this now. Before it was just like, I was just out there playing. So that was like pretty fond memory. And, you know, shout out to, if there's anyone listening, you remember the old school days of Johnny Roberts doubles. If there's one course that I could go back and play, like the original layout, it's Johnny Roberts, just like the most impactful course probably of my disc golf career.
Wow, that's a great question. We got some really good answers out of that. This is the same guy from Harry Brax. What is the biggest misconception casual fans have about being a professional disc golfer? That we don't have the same course collecting interest that casual fans do. That's the biggest misconception, as one of them, I think. That the average fan thinks that the average touring pro has not only the time, but the interest to Avery Jenkins themselves in every city that they go to, which for you newer listeners, if you do an Avery Jenkins, it means that you go to a city and you wake up at 6 a.m. and you play every course that you haven't played in that city. That's what he's doing right now. Avery Jenkins is with Maxime from MDG Media, and they are caravanning through the entire southern half of the country today, playing 3 disc golf courses. He texted me right when I landed. He was like, hey, you want to come on a big, fat disc golf adventure?
Sounds like Avery.
Yes, seriously. All right, that's my answer.
That's a good answer.
Most pros do not want to collect courses like that.
That's probably the best answer. For some reason, the first thing that popped into my mind was that we're not that good. In a weird way. I don't know how to put this. It's hard to explain. I don't even know what point I'm trying to make.
I know what you're talking about. So, like, say, like, a street performer, like, who, like, stands on a moving wheel or, like, can put on, like, a performance and do, like, juggle knives or, like, breathe fire or something like that. It's, like, on demand. It kind of goes into what you're saying. Like, if you were to go be put on the spot and people ask you to play like a casual round and like do really good for them, you can't really do it on command. Whereas like a street performer who's like really good at their craft will put a total show on for you.
I think it's also way more difficult to display talent in disc golf, like on a scorecard than like it. You can look at a bad scorecard and not see any of the like 10-30 plus rated shots that player threw, you know? And so I think that the skill that gets celebrated the most in our sport is consistency, but that overlooks like all of the natural skills that each individual has to have before the consistency thing even becomes like worth it. I mean, you have to be talented first, but if you're talented and not consistent, it might not seem like you're very good because your scores don't show it. And you're also like never that far away from being an inconsistent round. Like you're never that far off from like getting a couple bad doinks or just like not having the perfect, like, you're never that far away from a sub 1,000 rated round.
No, you're not. No, it's hard to be like, be humble and talk about this at simultaneously.
I think part of it too with the tour is like,
here's what I'm trying to say. The better you are at something, the more you can appreciate the ones who are the top of the top. So I think for your average disc golf fan, they literally can't really see how good the top is. If that makes any sense. Like if I watch professional pool players and Eagle watches professional pool players, Eagle will watch it and be like, oh yeah, they're really good. That's impressive. But to me, who spends so much time in my life trying to be good at pool, if I watch the professionals play, I'm like, you have no idea how unbelievably insane these guys are.
Yep. I mean, that's the main reason why
I was trying to make. Like, people can't understand how good the best are.
Fair.
In some way.
I think that's also part of the benefit to part of the benefits to watching a disc golf tournament in person. If you pick the right spots to spectate, you will get some of those moments to give you some of those perspectives where for like, I mean, what the most common is like if you see some casuals who have never seen somebody throw 400 feet and then the first time they see somebody throw 400 plus feet and they just like can't even wrap their heads around like the mechanics of like how somebody who's like not that much taller than them or that much in better shape than them would do that. And I think it's just different in disc golf. Like we're not bodybuilders or like marathon runners where like the key separation from like a talented marathon runner is the fact that he's like in absolutely ungodly shape. Like he's in wicked, wicked, wicked shape and he runs hundreds and hundreds of miles a week. And I think that for us, it's like a technique based thing. And so the best disc golfers aren't necessarily the ones who hit the gym the most or throw the furthest. These like individual skills that would impress the average fan isn't necessarily what allows you to win at the top. It's like being consistent with all of the skills you have.
Right. There's a lot of like fast twitch muscled fiber development that you need as like a young person to get to where Simon, AB, myself could like get to. There's very few, like in terms of elite distance, there's very few people who are able to put it all together without like tons and tons of work.
When I try to throw left-handed, I feel like whenever I try to throw lefty, I'm always just like, thank God your right side can do this because like, holy cow, trying to start from here now would be insane. So like part of what makes a pro disc golfer, and it's getting less and less like this, but especially in like 2019 or even 2021, which was the first year I toured, in 2021, if you wanted a tour on the pro tour, you had to buy the tour card. There was no, like, it was not even going to come close to selling out. There was no rating cap. There was nothing. You could just buy the tour card because, so what made you a professional disc golfer was that you were out at these tournaments and you were willing to live the lifestyle and willing to do the grind. Maybe not necessarily that you were the best athlete for that job. And I think, like, we see that a lot with, like, the James Proctors and the Scott Withers or the Ryan Sheldons, like, the guys who could have toured and are, like, in the 10-20, 10-30 range. I mean, obviously, Proctor did eventually tour, but there's always that, like, I think for some of the lower-level pros out on the road, there's always that, like, question of, like, am I just a pro because I'm out here doing it and nobody else is willing to do it and I'm, like, marginally athletically talented at this one little technique-based motion? I think that's where you can feel like not a pro.
What a question.
Shout out Harry. Also, boys, we're moving. We're at 120. What's XL length? 125?
125.
Wow.
I have to go get my child in 30 minutes.
Are we going to do one
more?
Yeah, we'll do one more. Shout out Harry Brax. Those are some great questions.
I never gave my answer on the last question, but I would say, like, your two answers are my answer.
Perfect.
Okay. This is from Johnny Simington. Firstly, big up to yourselves for sticking at this. Thank you. Love to hear it. Simon, do you have any memories from playing Whitcomb Farm in the UK? Maybe for British champs in 08?
Barely.
That was different from the European Championships. That was in the UK, right?
Yeah, that was in 2012.
Okay.
Yeah, gosh, I really don't remember. Not enough to really have a coherent story here, so we got to move on.
Speaking of the UK, I saw Derek Robbins wasn't he at USDGC?
We all saw him.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
I met him for the first time.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so cool. Just absolute legend, Derek Robbins. Eagle, wow, here's a deep dive. Why did you throw a glitch on hole 15 at Nokia? Is that a layup play or go for the basket? I was there. It confused me. At the Beast. That's got to be a layup play. No, it also wasn't a glitch. It wasn't a glitch.
I never threw a glitch.
Yeah. Well, what did you lay up? Stabilizer?
Okay. So if he's talking about this year, I threw an ohm.
That's what he thought was a glitch. That's a fair miss.
I'll just say that it's kind of sad that he thought it was a layup play. That must have been a reflection of how bad my shot was.
You were going for it with the ohm on 15?
Yes.
That's a huge shot.
The ohm can do it.
Wow, that's crazy.
I thought I had a good win.
Joey, where is next on your travel list? My bucket list of the places that I'm not going for work. That's a great question. I would say I'll just put a few because I don't want to pick one, but I think
Germany.
Germany. Okay, sure. Germany is up there. Absolutely. Actually, we spoke about this last week. You're going to play the German championships and it's during GMC. And I said, well, that's great because me and Simon will both have already won Pro Tours by then, so we won't have to play the first playoff event. So we'll both go over and play the German championships. We'll already be exempt
from
a championship. Also, I got 2 or 3 DMs from people saying that they voted for me for All-Star, and I thought that was so hilarious.
Oh, my gosh. Vote to Joey.
Okay, so Germany, London, never been to London. That's high on my list. And India.
Haven't you been to India?
No, I was supposed to go at the back end of this trip last time. But we had 2 cancer diagnoses in my family during that time. So I went to Dubai and then went home. All right. All right. Well, I can do one more or we can be done. Okay, here we go. Last one.
Do I have any Discord questions?
Crosby Lambert. Do any of you play video games? And he sent us a picture of the MVP Black Hole Pro Gravity that he made on Minecraft. Wow, that's cool.
I go through phases. I don't really have time to be the gamer that I know I could be.
Oh, wow.
During COVID, I got heavily into Guild Wars 2. And I remember on my birthday, I just let myself play all day, and it was for like 14 hours. It was like I was a total hikikomori for COVID with my video game addiction. As a kid, I was like seriously addicted to other video games as well. I liked a lot of weird ones. I was a big Terraria guy.
Oh, cool.
Unreal Tournament 2004. Got it. I never really got into Minecraft.
What was your system of choice? Were you an Xbox or a PC?
I was a PC. I never got a console. I was a PC guy. I had maybe some, I had like a Nintendo DS, Game Boy.
Oh, nice.
Like,
do you have a Tamagotchi?
Like Pokemon games. I never had Tamagotchi. I was a Pokemon kid.
Yeah, that's fair. I did Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh.
But I always think about like getting back into gaming, but I just really don't have the time. Like my entertainment of choice when I'm not doing anything productive is watching anime. And there's so many shows that I still want to watch that just gaming doesn't fit into that. It doesn't fit into the schedule, unfortunately, even though I know I really like it.
Simon, you got a PS5.
Yeah, I have a PS5. I have a Nintendo Switch. And I actually also have a PS2 that I bought specifically to be able to game the old school Tiger Woods games. Shout out 2003 and 2005. My favorite golf games of all time.
Wow.
But yeah, obviously since the kids were born. Actually, when Mia was born, I played the entire game of the Hogwarts Legacy, which I was very impressed with. I'm not a gamer whatsoever, so I was like, I didn't even know gaming like that was a thing. So I found it like so fascinating and cool of all the things you could do, and like the fighting animations were like so good. So yeah, I've played some of the Zelda games, which I thought were okay, but that was all pre-kids. And now,
did you play in your childhood?
Not much. I was just never good at it. My friends were into like shooting games that I always thought were a bit deranged, to put it nicely. And FIFA, I guess, was somewhat part of my life. But oh my God, sometimes people ask me what am I really bad at, and I never know what to say. I think FIFA is the right answer. I've played so much FIFA, and for how much I've played, I am so bad at it. It is tragic. And
I think I have a blog clip of you saying you're bad at FIFA.
That,
if you go back into 2017, watch my vlog from when I visited Bremen, you were playing FIFA, and you were just like, I'm so bad.
I don't know. You went to Bremen. That's crazy, Eagle.
Yeah, I went to Bremen.
I will say the thing that I have done the most, the game that I have inflicted the most damage to a device over, is Disc Golf Alley. I gronk spiked my phone into my beanbag chair, thinking that it would just kind of like absorb into the beanbag, and instead it like rocketed like a trampoline straight into the wall and just shattered my phone. Like, full everything.
This has triggered a memory for me. I broke my DS playing a level of Mario. I literally bit the top screen and like cracked the screen.
Nice.
And I was like, my grandma saw it and was like, what did you do? She was so like confused. Like,
that's our podcast name.
Screen.
I bit the Nintendo.
I bit the screen.
Oh, my gosh. Well, my childhood was similar. My parents very much kept us away from most games. Here's a little audio. Can you guys hear this?
Oh, yeah. Party.
I don't know what they're selling or if they're selling anything. But when I think I was like 10 or 11, it was at the point where it was too late. They got us a Wii. Where we were like already growing out of it. But I did play, I still did, because I had wanted it for so long. I played a lot of the Wii games. I had the FIFA version where if you just shook the remote, they would like automatically shoot top corner. So it was just like way early in the FIFA development where you like didn't have to be good. And that was fun. And then I played some RuneScape, if you guys know what that is, on PC.
I played some RuneScape.
I played a little RuneScape, and that's about it. I mean, I played like some Minecraft and Fortnite like on our school issued iPads. But like I said, outside of my Wii, all of my gaming basically, and my entire friend group's gaming, started when our school district issued everybody free iPads. That's how it started. So anything you could get on iOS. Flappy Bird, dude, I remember being one of the...
Hey, Flappy Bird.
And then they deleted it off the App Store, and I was like one of the only kids who didn't delete it out of rage, like not knowing it wasn't going to be downloadable again. I, like everybody else, like rage deleted it, and then it wasn't available again. And so I had one of the few iPads in middle school that had Flappy Bird OG.
You could have sold that for a lot of money.
Yeah, but then I had to turn it in for the summer, and they freaking restarted and wiped the whole thing.
Oh, my God.
That's a school district.
The only game I'm good at, I just remembered, is Snake. I can fill the screen.
You are really good at Snake.
On demand.
Yep. I actually find myself...
I did it on the plane, and a guy sitting two rows behind me on the other side of the aisle watched it and gave me mad props afterward, and he watched me fill the screen on Snake, and he was like, he was mind blown. I was like, it was all worth it.
I actually think maybe one of my most played games now is chess on chess.com. I play that most days. I play chess against Eagle and my dad.
Day.
Yeah. Yep, I suck, but it's fine. All right, you Scoville unit.
That last game was not your best, Joey.
I think I would play good chess if I could just like play the whole game in one. I think most people would, but I do not do a good job of re-engaging to each game when I come back from my one move a day and like remembering.
Well, yeah, if you have multiple games going and you just check in, you kind of forget where you were.
Yes, you
That's
do.
What I've noticed.
Yes, I remember.
Like, wait, what's going on?
The amount of bonehead moves that I've made, like right after I press the green check, then I'm like, oh no, thank you, gosh, you. Remembered you weren't supposed to move that one because now he's going to do this, but it's still fun. It's a good way to stay in touch with my dad. He likes to play, and Maria also. So I play you and Maria and Eli and my dad. Those are the four games I have going, and I lose most of them.
Sweet.
Well, you Scoville units, this was the first, no, not the first international episode, the first African episode, but that sounds weird.
Okay, good try. Eagle, your turn.
My turn? This is the first episode where I've seen Joey with his shirt off.
What's the... bite the Nintendo? I bit the Nintendo.
That doesn't have a good ring.
Nintendo bite.
How about multi-continental?
Okay, that's cool.
All right.
All right.
Sold.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks for sending amazing emails. Thank you for supporting us in whatever ways that you do. And we will see you for the next episode.
I want to end this with a question for Eagle.
What do you got?
If the Pro Tour was to run a doubles tournament, who would be your partner?
I don't know. Whoever asked me first.
All right. See you next week.
Join my Discord.